Very truly, I tell you, Pharisees, anyone who does not enter the sheepfold by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Jesus used this figure of speech, but the Pharisees did not understand what he was telling them. Therefore, Jesus said again, "Very truly I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep have not listened to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays his life down for the sheep." And on to verse 14. "I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep." So this evening, I'm going to dip in and out of talking about some of the things that we're doing with the youth here at St. Stephen's. But I'll come back to that in a moment. Actually, if we can have the first video clip. Last time I used a clip from The Lion King. I'm going for a different Disney film this time. So it's a clip from Mulan. Okay, another fantastic film, and I'd recommend watching if you haven't seen it. But just to give you a bit of background if you haven't. So Mulan is a character in Chinese folklore in a culture where everyone has their role to play. There was particularly a very clear expectation on how women were supposed to look and how they were supposed to behave. But Mulan, as a character, felt uncomfortable in that culture. Simply, she was not the person everyone else expected her to be. She spent so much of her time wearing a mask just to play the part of who everyone else wanted. In the scene immediately prior to the bit we watched, Mulan is playing the part of the perfect bride, or at least trying to. She was expected to be this perfect housewife, this perfect bride, to win the favor of the matchmaker so that she could bring honor to her family. But it was all going wrong. Everything she tried just went wrong because she was trying to be someone she wasn't. And sometimes that's a bit like us. Actually, we're trying to be someone other than who we are designed to be. But God wants us to be free to be the people he's made us. No masks, no part to play, no need to hide. You see, that's what it really means to live life to the full. To be who we were all created to be in everything we do, in our work, in our rest, in our relationships. I feel like I could actually just stop there. I pretty much made the point, but I'll break that down a little bit because actually this verse, John 10:10, "I have come that you may have life and have it to the full," that verse underpins everything that I'm doing, everything that we do with the young people and for the young people here. That the vision is to see young people living their life to the fullest it can be, as Jesus promised us. So what does it actually look like? So as I thought and prayed about this, particularly throughout last year, I kind of feel like there are three, most of what we do can fit into three areas that I've already mentioned. It's the work that we're doing. It might be the things we have to do, the job that we're employed for, the looking after the house, raising children, looking after other friends or relatives who can't care for themselves. For our young people, it's going to school, it's their homework. It might even be for reports that have to be done for the office. But also another part of actually the work we do is what we might do here, is what we do and what we give as a part of God's ministry. That's just as much our work as the job that we're doing. And then rest. Rest is pretty much just the downtime between everything else we do. It might be going out for a meal with friends. It might be watching a film, watching TV, reading a book. Sleeping is an important part of it. Whatever it is, it's the things that we do to relax, the things that we do to recover, to strengthen ourselves again. And then relationship. There's how we see and understand ourselves, and that is important. I spoke about that last time I spoke open to God, so I'm not going to go into too much detail on that again now. But there's also our relationships with each other, those around us now. It might be those in authority above us in the workplace. Might be those actually we have authority over, or that we are caring for and guiding. Might be our friends, might be our family, but it's those that are around us. And then I would say most importantly is our relationship with God. And I'll explain why I think that is most important as we go. So let's break them down a little bit more. So, work. In Luke 2, Jesus had been, by this point Jesus was about 12 years old. We have the story of him going to the temple with his parents, and actually he gets lost at the temple because he's busy in his father's house talking to the priests there. And then after that, we don't really hear from him for another 18 years. But what it does tell us, and actually it sums up those 18 years, in one simple line. And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. And actually, if that sums up everything that Jesus did, he most likely would have trained as a carpenter with Joseph. He probably would have worked with other people, traded with other people. He would have been building up respect. It tells us he was building up respect and favor. Actually, how well does that translate to what we do? When we're at work, how much time do we spend complaining that things aren't going particularly well, that we don't like the new manager, that we've had to work overtime again, or that an order's been messed up, so we've got the wrong stock, or whatever it is? How much time do we spend doing that? And how much time do we spend making sure that the work we do is really the best that we can give? That actually we are giving our fullest in our places of employment, in our looking after the home, or raising of children, or in our ministry here at the church? Are we really giving everything that we have to that? Because if we're not, are we living life to the full? Our work is a massive part of what we do. We can't live life to the full if we're not giving our full attention, our full life to that. In Colossians 3, verse 23, it says, "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as if working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward." In everything you do, work at it with all your heart. Give everything you have. Go the extra mile. Build up favor. Grow in wisdom. Learn the job well. Build up favor with those you're working with, your employers, your employees, if you're responsible for people, your peers at work. Use that time to build up favor and stature and wisdom. Romans 12, that I'm going to jump to, if I can now find it. I've moved my paper. Romans 12, verses 3-8. So actually, I'll give a bit of context before I just jump into this. So thinking, coming back to actually the ministry, God's ministry, and what we can do there. This is Paul talking about the spiritual gifts. He's talking to the Romans about the things that people are able to do, skills that people have to give to the church. "For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment, in accordance with the faith God has distributed to each of you. For just as each of us has one body with many members, and these members do not all have the same function, so in Christ we, though many, form one body, and each member belongs to all the others. We have different gifts according to the grace given to each of us. If your gift is prophesying, prophesy in accordance with your faith. If it's serving, then serve. If it's teaching, then teach. If it's to encourage, then give encouragement. If it is giving, then give generously. If it is to lead, do it diligently. If it is to show mercy, do it cheerfully. And actually, Paul couldn't stress enough about how much he goes into more on it in Corinthians about how important it is for us all to play our part as the body of the church, as the body of God's ministry. We've all been gifted things that we can do. We can all give that. And Paul says quite clearly here, if you've been gifted in teaching, teach. If you've been gifted in encouragement, encourage. And actually here at St. Stephen's, it's amazing that we've got so many things going on. Obviously, I love talking about the things we're doing with the youth. We've got a lot going on with the children, but there's more than that. There's daytimers, there's tea timers, there's preparing communion before the services, there's tea and coffee, there's setting up for church on a Saturday night. There's so much. There's so much opportunity to get involved and be a part of God's ministry at St. Stephen's. Actually, there'll be, no matter what your personal giftings are, no matter what you're most skilled at, there'll be something that you're able to do. If there isn't, I'm sure there's a way that there can be something to that gift, a way that gifting can be used. Actually, what we do in God's ministry is just as important, if not more, than what we get paid to do or looking after the house. I'm going to move on to the second part, so rest. It's important that we make time for rest. In Mark 4, we have the we're told of Jesus calming the storm. And when he got into that boat, first thing he did was fall asleep. Well, at least first thing we're told he was doing was falling asleep. He made time for that. Actually, just as we would make time to go to the doctor if we're ill, or go to the bank if we need to see someone about finances, we need to make time to go to our beds if we need sleep, to go to the sofa if we need to sit down for some time, to relax, to chill out, to recover. Mental illness, including anxiety and depression, but also stress, physical burnouts, they are all becoming more and more common. The statistics are showing that amongst teenagers, they are becoming more and more common as the stresses at school rise and are rising year upon year. And actually, if we don't make time for ourselves, if we don't make time for our young people to rest, to recover, to enjoy themselves, do something that isn't about school, then we run such a huge risk that the same thing's going to happen to them. That the anxiety of getting homework done, being ready for exams, is going to be at the front of their mind. That the stress of meeting the expectations and the requirements are going to drive everything they do. So actually, within the youth work, we run regular socials thing, and it's just times that young people can come and they can bring their friends, but it's times just to have fun. We don't talk about school. We don't think about school. We do talk about that on Sunday mornings, but at socials, that doesn't even come in the door unless the young people particularly need to talk about it or want to pray about it. It is purely a time for them to enjoy themselves. As a part of that, it's also important to make time for study. In Matthew 14, it says, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side, while he dismissed the crowd. After he dismissed them, he went up to a mountainside by himself to pray alone. In Mark 1, it says, very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Prayer and study is a huge important time of our rest. Actually, if we're not making time for that, we're not making time to understand the one who made us and to understand who we are and who we can be. Without it, we cannot live life to the full. Recently, I'll be honest, I do my best to read the Bible. every day. There are times when I find myself too busy and I get to the end of the day and, or rather I get to the next morning and I think, and I realize I was so busy, I didn't make sure I took time out. And I always wish I had. But recently, as we've been reading through the book of John in our leadership meetings, I've just fallen in love with this again. We read in John 12, I think it was, on Thursday, that that those who know me know my Father. They know my Father because they know me. And actually, although we know this, it's obvious that Jesus is the model of knowing God. But just a reminder of that, a reminder that we can find everything we need to know about God in this book, is amazing. And it is so important to make time to fit that in. And the last part, relationships. There are three sides to this, as I mentioned at the beginning. And this morning, we had Mark Tate in with the youth sharing his testimony, which is great. Actually, that has been an amazing time for the young people to understand different people's why they give their lives and devote their lives to God. This term, we're thinking about trying to understand ourselves and understand what God says about us. And Mark shared this in Ephesians 2, verse 10. For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. That's what God says about us, that we are his workmanship. We weren't just drawn up on a piece of paper. We weren't just roughly modeled out of dirt or clay or anything like that. We were his workmanship. He put time and effort into dreaming every single one of us up. The only way we can really live the life to the full that we're intended to is to understand that that is how God sees us. And then there's relationships with other people. No one can go through life alone. There's a great film called About a Boy. There's a man, one of the main characters, the man in that, starts by saying that every man is an island. That actually everyone is just their individual person. They can do life themselves. And occasionally people will cross from one to the other. By the end of the film, he realized no man is an island. Actually, nobody can get through life on their own. Jesus didn't try and get through life on his own. He made sure he had 12 friends around him that he made time for. He made time for Lazarus and Mary and Martha. When Lazarus died, he went to stay with them and to be with them. That time that we put into our relationships, it's building up favor. But it's important for our own well-being. It's important for understanding ourselves. But actually, God made us to be in communion. In Genesis, it says God made Adam, and then he saw Adam on his own. And I don't have the exact wording. I'm not going to get it right. But Adam looked lonely and alone. God made Eve to be with Adam, to give him a companion. Because that is how we are designed and created to be. But lastly, and most importantly, it's our relationship with God. God is the one who created us. God is the one who designed us. He has a purpose for us. He has a mission for each of us. We cannot be who we are truly designed to be if we don't know the one who designed us. It would be like a robot going to a group of people and saying, I don't know who made me, don't know who I am, don't know why I was built, I just exist. That robot has no purpose, it has no function, it just is. Actually, we all have a purpose. God, the creator, had a purpose for that robot. He had an intention, a reason to make that robot. But the only way the robot's ever going to know that is to know the creator. Going back to John 10, I can't quite find the words that I'm looking for. But okay, here we go. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger because they do not know, recognize a stranger's voice. We have to know the one who created us. We have to know God's voice. We have to know what he says about us, what he says about our purpose, about our mission, about our vision. Otherwise, we can never have the full life that we were intended to have. I feel like that was a bit of a rush through some of the vision that underpins and goes behind the youth work that we're doing. And I realize I didn't actually say much of the practical things we've got going on. But as I mentioned at the beginning, I will always love talking about it. I will always love sharing that. And please do come and speak to me at any time. But every social event that we do, Youth Alpha that we're doing this term, every Sunday morning session, every mentoring meetup that we're starting to get set up, everything that we do comes back to understanding the Creator who made us and understanding the life that he set out for us. But I'll say it again. We can't do any of that if we are not in a relationship with, if we do not know and understand the one who created us.